Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Well, welcome back to Pax Europiana, my podcast about European politics of the new peace order. Actually, the same like we have in the past, but a little bit adopted and refined. And in order to build this, I think, better, fairer, and more successful and more secure world, we need to enlarge the European Union. And in order to understand how that happened, how that can happen in the future, I'm very much in favor. I want to explain the European history of EU enlargement. In the first part, maybe you listen to it. I think I'll do it chronologically. I've talked about the period when we were 6 countries from 1915, when you want to start with the Schuman Declaration. That's our European Day on the 9th of May. And that's also then until 73, when the first time new countries joined, the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Denmark. And that's my second part, and I will talk about this enlargement and why it actually happened, why it took so long to enlarge in the European from 6 to 9, and how it actually happened, and who was pushing for it, and what are the forces behind it. And as you know already, I'm very pro-American, and I'm confident that also the forces behind that enlargement were very much Americans urging more unity of Western Europe in these very difficult times of the Cold War. It was the most difficult. You know, the Cold War had a lot of very difficult periods. The beginning, or when Stalin was still alive, maybe the most difficult one. And also the early 60s under the chaotic management of Khrushchev and Kennedy. It was a complete risky phase. But also the real terrible period obviously came with 68, the year of revolutions, a lot of insecurity in the West. And then the period of the 70s, I call it the terrible 70s. It was really very hard. So many countries were lost for the West, from Afghanistan to Iran in 79. Many African countries went socialist, and the whole world looked pretty bleak in that period. And also India went to the Soviets with this Soviet Friendship Treaty of 79. And India is already a really good topic when it comes to explain why and the United Kingdom has joined the European Union, or the European Communities, as it was called, in 73. And also the smaller countries, Ireland and Denmark, have joined with it. First of all, maybe to make it quite simple, why Denmark and Ireland joined together with the United Kingdom. Understand, please, these two smaller nations, compared to the big United Kingdom, basically very dependent on the economic integration of the United Kingdom and the market. So for the United Kingdom to join would have been possible alone, but for them to be then staying outside would have been a major disturbance of their market situation. And so this smaller dependent market on the United Kingdom joined together. And they're also strategically very close towards and United Kingdom. And so it was this triple enlargement in 73. And the United Kingdom obviously has a lot of political issues throughout this history with the United Kingdom. Ireland is obviously very much economically dependent on market access, and the island itself having 2 parts with the North. In the United Kingdom, it is quite logical that they are very much dependent on market access. And so the three countries joined together and in many ways were economic unit before and also now. Sadly, unfortunately, the UK has left now, but the prosperity level and the market access of Denmark and Ireland has completely transformed in the membership of the European Union. So I think that will be not such a big problem at the moment. But let's come back to the decisive year of 66, because this is the moment where there was the devaluation of the Indian rupee. Now you will say, what has the Indian rupee devaluation to do with the UK deciding to join the European Union in 73? Okay, but the logic is quite important because the British Empire very much was centered economically about India. India was, I mean, it's huge, including Pakistan and Bangladesh, also Burma. And so this was a huge volume of people and market opportunities. And in 47, everything was lost for the British, but it was a political break. The economic system, the trading system, the currency system continued. And it basically continued until the year 1966. Because why? Because there was a big war again between Pakistan and India. Wars always lead governments to overspend completely. And the way they often then react on the overspending is with devaluation. That was the so-called Indian devaluation crisis. And it was a significant one with 57% of 66. That led in the second stage then to the British devaluation crisis of 67. And then 66 and then 69. And that, of course, has led to other countries where the constant devaluation, this was not very popular. So the whole British imperial trading and currency system was in a complete meltdown. And then came also then the breakdown of the financial system with the Nixon shock in 71. And so the world was, the Western world was economically and politically completely shaken. And what I want to say, it was not a marriage of love, the British entry in the European Union. It was not a marriage of we have wisdom and we want that. Yeah? It was basically Britain tumbling, falling into the EU, into the hand of its partner. But half falling, yeah. It was not, the situation was not like wisdom or we really want to be part of it. It was a lack of alternative, and it was in a deep crisis of the Cold War of confidence, yeah. And it was also in a deep economic and currency crisis, which in the 70s actually got worse in the beginning. And in many ways, this kind of complicated start of the membership of the United Kingdom in the European Union and the complicated decade of the first years of membership. First, a referendum to leave again in 75, then the bankruptcy in 76, where the UK had then to go to the IMF. Quite disgraceful situation already the third time after the war, to my best knowledge. Devaluation crisis, 47, 49. The big crisis, and then the 69 crisis, then 76, Britain was really in a very bad condition. Why that happened? Basically because Britain won the Second World War, but won it with a huge amount of debt, loaded with a huge amount of debt, and also it was a lot of imperial obligations additionally, from Suez, we talked about it, to India, the breakup, everything was in a turmoil. But also because there was no kind of reboot and restart of the British economy and the British administration and the British constitution, because Britain won the Second World War. The European systems and at the core of it, obviously, the German, Western German system was completely, the past was completely negatively seen and justified so. And so the American built up a Western German governance system in the currency, in the constitution, in the way to see the world, which was modeled on American lawyers and American expertise, American kind of advisors everywhere. And, you know, also the guys and the gentlemen which they put in power, this was American endorsed personalities. And they were also with an American outlook in philosophy, like economic liberalism, like understanding of the Western world. They were serious pro-American people. And they were kept in power and they were supported, obviously, until the Brandt came to power. So in the first period, until 1917, these were all pro-American personalities which were leading in Western Germany. And that also made a big difference, obviously. It was much more advanced system with which Germany could start the currency, the constitution, the economic integration. And that obviously was not the case in the United Kingdom. Good. Maybe you have heard all of this. I'm sure you heard about the whole story about De Gaulle blocking the United Kingdom, because the United Kingdom wanted already to join in 63, then in 67, and then De Gaulle had to resign in the crisis of 69, and he did, and that basically opened. I mean, that France and Britain have been ancient enemies is also well known, the same like Germany and France have been ancient enemies. We are this continent. We are a continent full of ancient enemies. The Danish and the Germans, the Austrians and the Italians, and the France and the Spanish, the Spanish and the Portuguese, and and in the Nordic countries, in the Eastern European countries, the same. This is the history of our continent. We are full of ancient enemies. And some of this enemieship is going to such lengths that even after the Second World War, even when we were already in NATO, because France and UK were in NATO in the 60s together, and they are still today. And it led to this big crisis in 67. It was the NATO crisis, with France leaving the NATO defense structures, with also the NATO moving to Brussels, with France, De Gaulle, blocking a second time the UK application to the economic communities. I mean, this is totally reckless policy. Obviously, it's explained with many things when you read about it, about agriculture policy. Sure, it was not only about the agriculture policy. When it was about whatever, it was basically animosity. It was basically not granting this kind of membership, sitting on the same table, and towards the British, which were seen as ancient kind of opponents for European hegemony. And also it was very much about past grudges, about policy, because the whole career of Charles de Gaulle is only explainable by this very close partnership or friendship, or basically the British choosing him as one possible representative. Churchill decided he was decent, and he gave him all these opportunities to speak for Free France, and he was in many ways a personality, a government in exile supported by Churchill and by the UK, and he was not exactly very grateful for it, but that's on another topic. So the story of the British membership is a very complicated one, and it's some, in many ways also not a surprise that it ultimately came to Brexit, because they always saw the imperial system, the ancient Commonwealth, the former empire, and also this clear link with America as an alternative to European integration. Alternative which is not open to any other European country, but Britain is always very special, was always very special, was the hegemon of the world for over, let's say, after winning against Napoleon from the Vienna Congress, to certainly until America competed for that position in and about the World Wars. Certainly by the Second World War, also that time for Britain as a great power was also over. But that's not that the elite has really said that or somehow accepted that. Obviously, when you think you are in this inherited position of having a UN Security Council seat, you teach the children in the classes how the empire was a great force of the good, and how, and then you see the world, and one third is in this British red, and you think that this is the normal situation, that the world should listen to British guidance, or the British Empire is fantastic, then it's very difficult to explain why we all should sit together with 28, and every member state is equal, everybody has a voice, everybody has to listen suddenly to Malta and Cyprus and their issues on the basis of equality, sitting in a European Council where you just have one voice as well as a Prime Minister of Britain, when former these were all colonies. Yeah. So it's really complicated, because We have now several British ex-colonies like Cyprus, Malta, and Ireland in the European Union. And obviously, most of the other states are not nuclear powers, not UN Security Council seats. Anyhow, that's for today. I was very much against Brexit. But so what can I say? I digress from the time. So I want to explain. We were six for very long. We were six because the French have excluded the United Kingdom and with it Ireland and Denmark. And it's not very nice. So we had a decade of a British accession crisis, but the Europeans, led by France, are doing everything to avoid new membership. I mean, that's not very nice. And again, I'm confident, whoever knows, but certainly it was again American pressure to make sure that after de Gaulle, who probably was very much against American pressure, after de Gaulle designed, the next American and the next French leadership probably listened more to American pleas and requests. And so it was also in a much more complicated global setting of a crisis and escalation of the Vietnam War. I mentioned a lot the Vietnam War, I know, but it was a really dramatic period. And also, obviously, that led to a West which somehow in this crisis of the late 68, 69, 70 crisis, and the Soviet Union looking ever bigger, ever stronger, and that we basically, the three countries, they have, how can I say, they fell into the European Union out of desperation. It was the enlargement of desperation. It was not the enlargement of reason or of economic rationale. It was not the enlargement of love. It was the enlargement of desperation. And everything else, of course, now we interpret our past always very positively. And we say we were always strong. It was clear that the West will win the Cold War. It was clear that the Soviet Union will be defeated. And it was so logical because we have seen the defeat and the fall of the Soviet Union. We have seen the fall of the Warsaw Pact. And, but if you would live now and listen to that, that has happened in the year 69 or 70, there was very few people which believed in such a positive outcome. The more likely outcome was complete defeat and the loss of Western Europe, yeah? And so on and so on. We were very lucky. At this year, we lost in Africa and Asia. All these new countries in the decolonization process, they were all going to the so-called non-aligned movement. But basically, they were client states of the Soviet Union. Almost all of them. Huh? There were very few exemptions, and the ones were obviously very complicated, like in Indonesia and in Iran and in Chile. These were very complicated Cold War compromises, far from any kind of democratic market economies which we claim to represent and which we represent and which we are. But in the constellation of a Cold War, which was many decision makers had the perception that it is unwinnable, and we in the maximum can contain and hope to keep most of the countries which are free. And we had to invest for example, in the South Vietnamese freedom so heavily that it became such a kind of an escalated war that it lost a lot of credibility of what the West is about in the process of the Vietnam War. Because it was the idea to repeat the South Korean War for liberation and make sure we do a similar intervention to keep South Korea free. The logic was very clear also in South Vietnam. But then basically it became such an ugly war that the whole credibility in our Western democracies was undermined by the brutality of the escalating war. And that undermined also the credibility of our appeals, of our values, of our systems. And we were in a deep crisis. And that's why also the student movement came, the student revolution, the protests in France. Obviously, the Soviet Union was so strong that they made a huge intervention in 68 in the Czechoslovak Republic. Obviously, in a way, you can see that also how weak they were, that they almost lost the Czechoslovak Republic. But under our watch, under Western eyes, on the borders with Germany and Austria, a huge military intervention to suppress a fellow socialist republic which wanted to have a different socialist way. They didn't want to have the Soviet socialism, but they were not free market liberals. They are taking some kind of libertarian direction. This was basically a modern social democracy, but very much to the left of modern social democracy. So, and this was suppressed by the Soviet Union, and we did about nothing to help the people there. And such a dramatic helplessness obviously was also delegitimizing, and the whole system of the Western alliance and our system, we were shaken to the core. Nobody knew, will the Soviet tanks stop at the Austrian-German border, or might it be a full escalation? Who knew that in August 68? And in this kind of condition, Ireland and the UK and Denmark, they basically, out of fear, out of loss of global significance, out of this economic crisis in which the UK was from 45 to 76, basically, or 70, which only with Thatcher has then gradually improved under difficult circumstances. But by time, it was then only the 80s when with Reagan and Thatcher, we somehow lifted up in the higher prosperity level and confidence level. And we somehow managed to somehow sustain the effects of these two major oil shocks. Don't forget that one, which were also leading to this crisis. But, you know, obviously we can talk in the next series about the 70s more, and the terrible 70s, because they were the consequence then for the next enlargement only. That was the enlargement of the three ex-fascist military dictatorships, yeah, which came another 13 years later. And again, you can be sure that it was strategic considerations which were backed up by American security obligations and interests, which were the key to that enlargement as well. And we are in the future also key to future enlargement. As you know very well, I want to explain all this also because I want Ukraine and the Balkans, Georgia and Moldova, to join the European Union in this decade. And it's only possible with American leadership, and there is no doubt about it. And also this enlargement, the second one from 6 to 9, UK and Denmark, Ireland, happened with American support and by American pleas for more unity after de Gaulle's defiance, his famous visit to the Soviet Union, his anti-Americanism was quite similar to the one we see now with Macron, and we have experienced in other periods. When America is in a crisis, like it was in the 60s, obviously, with this young, inexperienced President Kennedy, with the terrible assassination, with the escalation of the Vietnam War, there was a major crisis of global leadership, American confidence crisis. This was exploited by France, which was never happy with American-dominated Europe, and it has then blocked Britain, thinking Britain always as a proxy for America. And this was how much we are in unity. And then when Charles de Gaulle was gone, France was in a succession crisis and in a confidence crisis. And then it could no longer sustain this form of obstructionism. And America under Nixon in the first term, let's never forget the Nixon first term, as critical as he is as a personality, and I really don't like him, and all the things he did wrong with the escalation in Vietnam, the bombing of North Vietnam, and also the currency crisis and Watergate. But he was in his first 4 years a really quite powerful global leader. He was really putting an agenda forward, yeah, in many aspects, good or bad. But he then was definitely decisive also and seen as this decisive leader to get these three new countries into the European Union. And so I think it was, and so I think it has been, and so it always will be. We definitely need a strong America allowing us to overcome our differences and be more solidaric in the European Union. Unfortunately, also in the case of Serbia and Kosovo and Bosnia and Moldova and Ukraine and Albania, it is the very same mechanics. Without American leadership, we are not able to manage the complicated NATO enlargements which are now coming and which were always problematic, and each country has its own complicated package to carry, And we are much too divided in the European Union and in the European NATO allies to really get such things done without American nudging, leadership, vision, support, and from time to time also pressure. It must be also this. Because unfortunately, as much as I love Europe, and I love it, yeah, it's a wonderful continent. I love the European Union as much as you can love institutions, but it is a wonderful institution, but it can only be understood and it is only developed because American leadership wanted it, formed it, helped it to unite and got it forward from step to step. And each enlargement was very complicated. And it was never very popular because what it means is more solidarity, more costs, more openness and overcoming of European nationalism. And each of our states is built on ethnic nationalism. That's our history. That's has also maybe in the history some positive aspect to form national identity, national solidarity. But overcoming this kind of identity-driven identity states which we have is very complicated and for national leaders alone in Europe almost impossible if they are not really then having greater incentives or basically feel motivated by the one or the other discussion with an American ambassador or an American president to vote for the common good of Europe. And this is exactly what we need now, because I don't believe that out of the wisdom of our logics and values alone, the French president will allow Albania to sit on the same table with him. This might be racist or might from him. I don't know his full motivations on it, but it's only with American power to overcome such French obstructionism towards new members. And that especially is true now when the United Kingdom unfortunately has left. And so we need more than ever American leadership. And that's also why I do this podcast and why I tell all this history about enlargement. Let me conclude. Why we are six countries? It's because America wanted it. And it was not a marriage of love. It was a desperation in the Cold War. It was the economic failure of the United Kingdom and its imperial and sterling system, which was breaking down under the powerful changes of the global geostrategic system. It couldn't sustain it anymore. It looked for an alternative, and there was only Europe, because Europe was endorsed by America and supported. So there was this logical choice. And after the French obstructionism was finished, then Britain and the two other states, Ireland and Denmark, could join. And so we became nine countries. And I will now tell in the next episode how we became 12 countries. And it took another 13 years for these three countries to join. No, a little bit faster in the Greek case, but Spain and Portugal until 68 to become. And a lot of geostrategic changes had to be happening in order to make both these three enlargements or the third enlargement round possible. And for this, I will tell that history in the third part of this series. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into five themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first three boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.